This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen, ladies. My name is Kevin Kenny. I'm here today with Bob Dickey. For the last 6 years, we've been working on a project to utilize ethanol in engines. And today, we're going to talk about our system that utilizes ethanol in diesel engines in a way and for the purpose of lowering emissions and displacing fossil fuels. And we have a PowerPoint that Dr. Firevoid has distributed, and I'll be going through that. They'll be numbered. If at the end of the presentation, we'll open it up for discussion and questions, so please ask as many questions as you can. I'd like to introduce Bob Dickey. He's the chairman of Clean Flux Power Systems, LLC. Bob oversees all business decisions, and his duties primarily involve CFP technology's regulatory and compliance impact, EPA and CARB diesel, and clean diesel campaigns. Bob's a past state senator for the state of Nebraska. He's the past president and current chairman of the National Corn Growers Association. Bob served as an officer and past chairman of the U.S. Grains Council during the time which he represented the U.S. corn, sorghum, and barley sectors, to foreign customers in Asia, Latin America, Europe, and the Middle East. In addition, Bob has led and has participated in a number of trade missions around the world, including Mexico, Japan, Hong Kong, China, Cuba, and Europe. Through his service at the Nebraska Corn Development Utilization and Marketing Board, the National Corn Growers Association, and the U.S. Grains Council task forces and committees, Bob has gained extensive experience targeting market development, planning for long-range research opportunities, and developing strategic education and funding support. As a member of Omaha-based Farm Credit Board, Bob gained extensive financial planning experience working with and assisting agricultural-related individuals and businesses in Iowa and Nebraska, South Dakota, and Wyoming. An accomplished formal speaker and media moderator, Bob has also appeared on CBS Sunday Morning, Channel Earth, Ag Day, has completed as many as 20 radio interviews per day at the National Association for Farm Broadcasters in Kansas City. His list of distinctions and awards is too lengthy to list in the present format, but Bob is recognized for his service and leadership in government, commodities association, agricultural organizations, universities, businesses, and community groups across the U.S. Bob currently owns and operates a farm in Laurel, Nebraska. And I'd like to turn it over to Bob. He's going to go through a list of materials that would be relevant to this group. And Bob, why don't you go ahead?
Well, thank you, Kevin. As Kevin mentioned, I am Bob Dickey, and I've been involved with this project for over the last 6 years that I'm truly intrigued with, since it can help increase the demand for ethanol. As the past president and now current chairman of the National Corn Growers Association, I've been working with efforts to expand corn utilization markets by serving on various ag commodity committees for the development of new enabling technologies such as this system. Several years ago, I developed a dryland farm into an irrigated farm and added a center pivot irrigation system which was powered by a diesel engine. I retrofitted the ethanol fumigation system that Kevin Kenny had been working on, and the results were fantastic. We replaced diesel fuel with ethanol during the test period and saved money at the same time. So from what we learned here, we took forward to the railroad industry and are now testing our ethanol fumigation system in San Antonio, Texas, at the Southwest Research Institute. And the results look very, very favorable. Recently, I've worked with a group from Lincoln, Nebraska named Clean Flex Power Systems, LLC, of which I'm a partner of, to test locomotives at the Southwest Research Institute. The results are very encouraging, as I mentioned. And following my comments, Kevin Kenny, our inventor and engineer, will explain what this technology can do for diesel engines. I believe the induction of ethanol and water into diesels can be a solution to our country to rid itself from fossil fuel dependency, while at the same time lower greenhouse gas emissions throughout the United States. Here are the topics Kevin will discuss to help further explain to this highly technical group what this clean diesel technology involves. Number one, the Clean Flex Power System uses ethanol in diesel engines. It has the ability to vary volumes of alcohol slash ice water and the actual proof content within each gallon of liquid mixture inducted into the diesel engine. These capabilities are major attributes in our system's ability to function successfully across the board of all diesel engine designs that we've looked at. Number two, CleanFlex Power LLC has new technology that can clean up diesel engine emissions and broaden the use of cleaner fuels such as ethanol to be used. This technology allows for the expanded use of alternate fuels such as ethanol, propane, natural gas, and so on to be used in existing and new diesel engines, which would lower emissions and have potential fuel savings for off-road and highway diesel engines within fleets across the Midwest. Number three, our company needs to be included on EPA's emerging technology list to become eligible for various diesel retrofit needs all across this country. Four, we have a unique and practical solution to diesel exhaust emissions regarding the Tier 3 and Tier 4 emissions qualifications criteria set forth by the EPA. Five, our system uses existing diesel engine platforms, so excessive engine modifications of fuel system and emission systems are insignificant to retrofit into our retrofit package. Six, we have petitioned the EPA to get included onto the EPA's list of emerging technology. And seven, we hope our biofuel-driven systems adds more demand and versatility to ethanol, which we think will help the ethanol industry survive in the long term. All of this will require getting our patent-pending biofuel solution by the EPA's emerging technology designation into existing diesel engine markets across the United States. Our retrofit can be used on different types of ethanol. As chairman of the National Corn Growers Association, of course, I prefer corn-based ethanol, but it can also be cellulosic ethanol, switchgrass ethanol, algae ethanol, and so on. In summary, clearly demand for ethanol is not at industry capacity and is obviously being underutilized by one-use method, gasoline blending. The government's ability to move toward a cleaner, less dependent fueling infrastructure can and probably should include other means of utilizing ethanol than just E10 and E85 gasoline blends. We believe we have the best option to increase demand for ethanol if our technology is widely adopted for current and future diesel engine configurations. By being granted emerging technology status by the EPA, this promising technology can get the shot in the arm that it's needed to deploy large numbers of retrofits by the EPA's National Clean Diesel Campaign. And I thank you for this time. Kevin?
Thanks, Bob. I'm going to start with a PowerPoint presentation, folks. And I'm not sure how these are conducted in the past, but I certainly wouldn't mind if I was interrupted and a question asked along the way for the purpose of clarity. So feel free at any time to jump in. I did get a list of individuals attending or that were on the invite list, and it looks like we have possibly 25 people on the line, so that's terrific. Again, Bob's been a big help in opening doors, and we're very fortunate to have his leadership behind us. And let me start out on slide number two. What we have there is a picture of Bob's irrigation engine. I had called Bob about around 2004, 2005 time frame, and I asked him, since he was a political leader, to look at new uses for ethanol from an equipment system development standpoint and to try to shed light on the practicality from the trade missions that he's been on and the wisdom that he's had and garnished over the years in politics. As you know, he's a past state senator, and he's familiar with state governments as well as federal trade organizations. So he said, well, let's just start out in the farm, Kevin. He said, let's just do it on my own irrigation system. So we did. And that summer in 2008, we have two tanks there. And on Bob's left would be our right, would be the ethanol water tank. and we ran 120 proof ethanol, which is 60%. And we ended up running probably around a 20 to 30% displacement rate alcohol for diesel. And that year, if you remember, we had $4 diesel fuel. And so it was timely, and he saved money on that scenario. In the bottom left, we have a picture of a semi that we'll go to some data later in this presentation. That's been on the road now for over 100,000 miles. We've signed that up with a test program with the EPA, so we'll refer some data on that down the road in a more complete fashion. In the bottom right picture is our Congressman Jeff Fortenberry. It's just a representative picture of how we've tried to get our message out and where we think the expanded markets for ethanol may be, which we think could be in a technology such as this. Slide number three, I'm just going to read it off, folks. CleanFlex is a sophisticated computerized emission control system for diesel engines. We use a greener, cleaner, biorenewable fuel, which provides less dependence on foreign oil. And it also, because of its physical and chemical characteristics, aids in the combustion process of diesel fuel. And so you might want to tab that as an extender as well as an emissions reducer. CleanFlex optimizes utilization of ethanol. We feel like our efficiency levels are as high as diesel fuel, if not higher. The EPA was quoted as saying that alcohol fuels, when operating at their peak thermal efficiency in comparison to diesel engines, they're as efficient or nearly 43% efficient as diesel engines. Now, that came from a report the EPA put out. High efficiency and low emissions of port injected engines would need alcohol fuel. In essence, what we're trying to do is to move the burn and the type of fuel from a heterogeneous high cetane fuel. We're trying to cool that off with the homogeneous air fuel mixture, low cetane fuel. And those are good methods when you're out to reduce particulate matter and NOx, which are the two primary air toxins that the EPA has addressed in the 1990 Clean Air Act. And all the emission standards that we're having to face right now in diesel engines have their evolutionary roots within the 1990 Clean Air Act. Go back to the PowerPoint. The CFP, which is the acronym CleanFlex Power, licenses competitive clean diesel technologies which can revolutionize the diesel emission protocol sanctioned by the EPA and CARB. As far as fitting in with strategies, we consider ourselves a pretreatment, which in essence is an in-cylinder treatment. We can work with any diesel engine platform that we've looked at on the market today being produced or manufactured. So in other words, tier 0 through tier 4 interim, our system can work with them. We can work with mechanical or we can work with electronic diesel injection systems. Our tests so far, we've reduced NOx, which is smog, 42 to 76% in our testing. We can go over 80% NOx reduction, which gets us into the areas of Tier 4 compliance with exhaust gas recirculation. We also lower the air charge temperature through evaporation, and that's a good system that we can rely on to keep the engines running longer, because we can keep them cooler. Our particulate matter reduction has been hard to quantify other than, with the eye. I can tell you that our testing of recent days has been extremely satisfying as far as the particulate matter reduction. This is significant. Of all the technologies out there, you might reduce one, you might reduce two, but you're always going to have a penalty, whether it's a fuel penalty through fuel use through DPF regeneration, or SCR, selective catalytic reduction costs associated with the dosing levels of urea. And on both of those situations, we actually reduce the diesel fuel that could be used dosing for the DPF dollars, and we also knock back the concentration of an exhaust stream, which would, in essence, knock back the dosing rate of SCR. So far as competing, I think we enhance those two systems. And as far as EGR goes, that's our perfect partner because we can take the heat from the EGR and absorb that through our evaporation of alcohol and water in the air charge. And that's probably our best co-patriot when it comes to an equipment system designed to lower NOx. I'm going to go to slide 5. Some of these I'll be a little bit redundant, I apologize, but I'm going to read them off anyway. Our engines run significantly cooler. We've tested the air charge at anywhere from 100 to 200 degrees lower on all the CFM coming into the engine, which directly correlates to less NOx. And we also feel that there's a lot of pre-flame combustion attributes that lower the amount of NOx being produced because of the temperature on the flame front being lowered. We see that there's an oxygenation process with ethanol. We have the ability to provide a higher volumetric efficiency coupled with durability. So as far as any engineer that's out there trying to figure out how to provide downsizing technologies on engine weight and cubic inch, we have a great claim as far as that effort would pertain to. Our technology is patent pending. We filed a patent a year and a half ago, and so that's our status as far as intellectual property goes. Slide 6, we have a separate fuel delivery system. It's a dual fuel system. The plausibility and the added cost of a second fuel tank or a second fuel system is not nearly as distasteful as it once was, in my opinion. And we feel that by doing this, you have yourself the ability to flex in and out of your primary fuel volumes, whether it's a high cetane injection or a low cetane induction philosophy. Parameters that would contribute to the logical process of determining that fuel curve would be economic factors of diesel versus ethanol pricing. Environmental regulation factors, federal and state, geographic boundaries, crossing the California border. You know, you can flex on the go under a load with a computerized system into low cetane induction and away from high cetane injection. And these are all inherent capabilities that we have built into our system that we're proud of. Today, we say that we would like to start out with a ratio of 85% diesel fuel and 15% 120 proof ethanol. Some of the dual fuel, and even though it's not fuel, liquid urea dosing rates have been mentioned to be as high as 6%. And there's no displacement of diesel fuel that's being injected in that scenario. And we feel that if we can provide these good results of NOx reduction, particulate matter reduction, at a 15% 120 proof to 85% diesel ratio, then we're not going to be tabled in a BTU per gallon scenario and basically cast off as a nice idea that's not economic. We're very positive that today we are economic, that today this is a good idea and a good way to go. And we think it will save the consumers money. I'm going to go to slide 7. If you folks want to flip it back and forth to slide 8, this is a very important chart. I tried to get too much on slide 7, so I expanded for the people like me that need reading glasses, the chart. What I want you to understand is that we have effects on combustion that are favorable for the purposes of generating power efficiently and for lowering emissions of NOx and particulate matter primarily. The part that you're looking at, combustion process, Dr. Dennis Sievers at the Sandia National Laboratory, and it tells quite a bit about diesel combustion and how we fit in and interface with the claims that we actually have and the results that we've proven. Take, for example, the temperature on the bottom chart. We move the bar from right to left on the combustion temperature. By fumigating alcohol water, that slows down the rate of burn. And so what we end up getting is a cooler temperature, less ionization of nitrogen. There's two ways we increase the air-to-fuel ratio, or lower the fuel-to-equivalency ratio, I guess you would call it. By cooling the air charge, you get a denser oxygen makeup, and you get more air into the chamber, and ethanol is an oxygenated fuel. So you've got a liquid form of oxygen coming in there. It helps have that increase in volumetric efficiency, and so in essence, you have a wider smoke-free power range. And as we work our way down in the equivalency ratio, we stay away from particulate matter production. I'll read the bottom real quickly. We utilize ethanol to adapt engine to a dual fuel system. Ethanol does not mix with diesel fuel. There's people out there that have tried it. It doesn't have good fuel storage capability in cold weather, we've heard. And we feel like by inducting alcohol, you get more benefits out of the alcohol than by injecting it. And that's based on our own observations and research. We've displaced diesel fuel. Ethanol is a carbon neutral fuel. And specifically, when you're looking at using ethanol in E10 and E85 mixtures, it has helped the big cities, especially as far as the smog and pollution. So here we have a wonderful opportunity to, in essence, do the same thing. 15% 120 proof works out to be about 9% 200 proof ethanol, which is basically 10% ethanol formulation. Down the road, because our system's computer driven, we have the ability to collect carbon credits, and these may be useful down the road, and that's another debate for another day. But we can interface through USB serial port connections. We can be monitored through satellite interface. Anything you can do with Windows, you can do with our system. Prior testing and other diesel engines have shown significant reduction of NOx and particulate matter and increased fuel efficiency. This is a chart we need to look at as far as how diesel fuel burns. Diesel fuel burns off the tip of the injection spray, photometric at 17 to 1, and goes rich and produces soot and causes particulate matter when you run out of air or in zones of ultra-rich combustion. By mixing a homogeneous charge compression ignition mixture, a pre-mixed air-fuel mixture, very lean, we can burn these fuels, and there's phenomena that goes on with the high humidity / water alcohol induction. It actually has a, it breaks up the surface tension of the diesel spray droplets, which creates a lot higher air-to-fuel contact. So during combustion process, that's a good thing to have as far as setting out to not have particulate matter produced off those flame tips of the diesel injection event itself. I'm going to go to slide 9. On slide 9, we need to recognize that the EPA has the authority to regulate non-attainment areas. And in March 2010, there will be possibly a, they put out a memo that they're going to actually lower the standard on ozone, the 8-hour attainment level. And so if that happens, cities are going to be under the gun to do what they can to meet these attainment standards. And we think we're the fastest and the quickest method of flexing into that for in-use diesel engines. And, you know, our infrastructure is in place, basically. We feel there's water and alcohol distribution channels all over the place. And there needs to be the cultivation of thought and awareness of what we can do, actually. On slide 10, we worked with the Detroit Series 50 four-cycle engine in this bus, and it 1997 vintage. We had this in Omaha, the Omaha Truck Center, in October of 2009. And you'll notice on diesel baseline at 155 horsepower, And I apologize for E60. We said we were going to cleanse our publications for the sake of staying away from creating acronyms that people get used to. We don't want to call this E60. We just want to call it 120 proof ethanol for the purpose of explaining the chemistry. We had to, with automatic transmission, all we measured was a power increase at the same full throttle setting once we turned our induction system on. So in the test 1, 2, and 3, respectively, we had a 45, a 50, and a 45 horsepower increase on the three different runs that we had. But what's interesting about this is that we actually lowered NOx under a higher engine load when we started inducting water and alcohol. We lowered NOx 26, 25, and 28%. And we have a slight hydrocarbon increase, carbon monoxide increase. Some of these increases are not significant. They can be easily mitigated with a diesel oxidation catalyst. But that's the byproduct of moving from a heterogeneous to a homogeneous compression ignition event. We were real proud of this test with this bus, and again, this is just a regular four-cycle electronic diesel injection truck engine. Our results here may be a little bit different because of the horsepower differences, but we can interpolate the same and predict the same response. For the next test, I apologize for not having the diesel baseline number on there. However, on this truck that's rated at 4.25 horsepower, at the 330 horsepower output, we reduced NOx 48%. And in this test, we were running 20% 120 proof to 80% diesel. When we increased the maximum amount of flow rate under the highest load, this truck went from 500 to 700 horsepower, and the fan actually shut off. And it was to the amazement of all the diesel mechanics on site that actually happened. And so the fuel penalty turned into a fuel reward in this scenario. That's a 35 horsepower fan on this 3406 CAT engine. You could expect it to be burning 2 gallons of diesel fuel an hour. And through the fuel coolant metering into the intake, we actually shut it off. So we can't look at in-cylinder efficiencies, gain and losses alone. We want people to stand back and look at the whole equipment system that you've got to deal with. And in the case of a combine, we're agricultural-based entities out here. We worry about EGR and DPF systems increasing the chance of auto-ignition or flashing of the dust and the trash that builds up around the engine. In agriculture, you can't hardly help that. And we think we'd be a great solution in that scenario to just cool the overall temperature down in the proximity relative to the engine. I am moving towards slide number 12. I've got half an hour into this presentation, I believe, so I'm doing okay for time. We took Omaha, Nebraska, for our example here. We met with the mayor, Jim Suttle, in Omaha, and we had a good conversation with some of the issues that these folks are facing. Omaha is on the brink of becoming a non-attainment zone, which would be regulated by EPA standards. If that happens, we have questions, and so did the mayor's office, on would that interfere with interstate commerce, some Interstate 80 going through Omaha. And what ways could they help themselves as far as getting rid of the smog, which is derived from NOx, primarily, of internal combustion engines? And primarily, the diesel engine is the culprit. Whether it's over the road, off-road, or the Union Pacific rail yard there, they have multiple issues that they're going to be faced with over the next several years with the increasing severity of regulation of NOx in particulate matter. This slide here cites the Code of Federal Regulations that are going into effect, and we quoted the Nebraska Department of Economic Quality. EPA tightens ozone standards implications for Nebraska. If ozone levels continue to trend upward as they appear to have in recent years, the Omaha Council Bluffs MSA could become non-attainment in the future. And that was a very recent publication. I'm at slide 13 now. Again, let's sound redundant. I'll keep moving along here so we get to the question and answer period. The fuel coolant delivery system is what we like to call it because we are providing fuel which could actually be metered up to be a primary fuel in a diesel engine. And it's a coolant because it cools the engine. It cools the combustion. And that's not a bad thing. Efficiencies, and you do it in the presence of efficiency at a very high level, and that's the way diesel engines run today. We're a little bit biased. We're here in the Midwest. We like to promote agriculture. We think there's a biofuel-based retrofit technology that could and should in new OEM certification venues, as well as a lot of the National Clean Diesel Campaign lower the emissions of in-service diesel engines. In California, they're taking a lot of these engines and they're taking a sledgehammer to them and getting rid of them, and it's costing the taxpayers a lot of money to do that. And we think that there's probably a reason to look at maybe extending these engines if we can keep them cleaner, especially with the primary two air toxins of NOx and particulate matter that the EPA has gone after. Go to slide 14. Okay, we consider ourselves an in-cylinder pretreatment for NOx and particulate matter reduction. To be frank, there's a lot of people worried about the future of their diesel engines. We had the chance to meet with one of John Deere's senior engineers, and he said that they've put their largest company expense ever into creating a Tier 4 emissions reduction compliance strategy within their company's operation. And so as they go towards Tier 4 final, the engines, according to the person I talked to within John Deere, are going to cost more money for the amount of horsepower you get. And these engines are probably not going to last longer, and I think there's worry that they will not last near as long because of the extra heat and pressures that are going to have to be dealt with. We think that a single gallon of ethanol used in a diesel engine is as valuable as a gallon of ethanol used in gas engines for the country's well-being, and could be more valuable if you're looking at the overall scheme of why we're doing what we're doing, and that's trying to keep competitive with other entities out there that don't use biofuel-driven solutions. And we reduce greenhouse gas emissions as well, and that's just part of the embodiment of an alcohol-based fuel being introduced in one way or the other. Water and ethanol are available, and the varying ratios you can predict, you can have a very precise and dependable combustion event. And within our capability to meter the fluid delivery systems, we are as precise as any high-tech diesel engine as far as when we inject and the duration of how we inject. And our prediction of the outcome of that event has been extremely uniform. Today and yesterday's diesel engine will not be the norm of tomorrow. The Tier 4 diesel engine is going to be a lot different. And there's going to be a lot of education involved with getting the consumers into that mode operandi to deal with that engine. I want to move along here. This slide here on slide 15 is a little wordy, and I want to open it up for discussion. And I want to talk about slide 16. Now, this might be a little bit of a dated photo, but this is kind of what you're looking at for a Tier 4 final highway vehicle that we've looked at in the past. The SCR, of course, the selective calic reduction uses urea. And so there will be a second tank for that. Urea does not help you increase your diesel efficiency. It allows for a advancement in diesel injection timing, which can make that engine more efficient and remain compliant. I think there's a lot of people that are hearing that urea somehow, and the myth is that it helps the diesel burn. I mean, there's all kinds of wild claims out there. Urea does nothing but reduce NOx to nitrogen gas and water if it's done right. And so what we think is that the urea doser, which is controlled by a urea, a NOx sensor, we can basically tune that clear back. And if we're a component of a strategy of an equipment manufacturer, or if we're given as an option for a consumer, we can hold our own with dosing the urea back. The diesel particulate filter, and I'm surmising that that's going to be part of the Tier 4 solution in most equipment systems out there. The need to have that is enhanced by exhaust gas recirculation, EGR systems. And if we can interface, get rid of the need for an EGR and live with a lot lower generated particulate matter from the combustion event itself, the question that I pose this group of engineers is, can we get by with a passive diesel particulate filter? And can we live with the maintenance restraints? I think there's a heck of an opportunity there. I want to go to past slide 17. I want to get down to slide 18. This is important. 120-proof ethanol is where we started out. We had to pick a proof. We can go lower than that in alcohol content. And it may very well be 100-proof or 80-proof. It just depends on what the situation would necessitate. Our power curves are good on all three of them. But the best part of it is alcohol is an extremely good stabilization additive for a liquid solution that's to be kept in storage and to maintain its physical and chemical integrity. It doesn't freeze on this planet. And as far as the whole list of water-soluble components that you could put in it, you can put lubricity additives in it should you need it, antioxidant, corrosion inhibitors. And we have also applied for fuel patent additive packages for this fuel coolant solution that we're proposing to you folks. Again, we're not going to affect the diesel engine's lubricity requirement because we don't go through the diesel injectors. But it's very important when we're trying to avoid being just tabled on a BTU per pound comparison to diesel fuel to note that a high humidity induction provides a higher lubricity value for the engine's overall operating condition. Steam is a very good lubricity additive for the cylinder versus the cylinder wall friction. And there's a lot of reasons why the steam component helps the efficiency of the engine. And there's so many of them, I'm not even going to go into them right now. But steam engines are proven. They've been around a long time. In November of 2009, I'm on slide 17, and I'm looking at 41 minutes into this presentation. We worked with the fellow down there that has a typical scenario. He's trying to keep Tier 0 engines out there because they're dependable. They do the job. The mechanics are trained to work on them. However, in California, I believe he's told me that this engine isn't going to work. It will not pass emission standards, and he doesn't think it will pass future emission standards, especially not in cities throughout the United States. He decided to test this engine. It's a Caterpillar 379, a liter engine, rated at 600 horsepower. And so we kept the engine on the dyno throughout our test running 600 horsepower. We started out at baseline. Now, if you go to slide 20, this is exactly what we ended up seeing as we started the test. We had three spots of zero alcohol water reduction. Our NOx was between 720 and 780 parts per million. and which we find is somewhat typical for a lot of these engines. As we went down in diesel injection volumes, and as we went up in alcohol induction volumes, we lowered the production of NOx because we avoided the ionization of nitrogen. And the one anomaly there, you'll see around 64% where it actually went up. But what happened was running a manual pressure thing on the fuel rail, we lost pressure. And so that's interesting. We're wanting you folks to look at this as is that if you have a particular NOx number you're going after, if you're going to try to certify an engine or to retrofit an engine to meet a specific requirement of emission standards, it's highly predictable. And this chart, we ended up reducing NOx substantially around the 48 to 50% range. And this has nothing as far as EGR, SCR, or DPF. We did notice a reduction in smoke, but we couldn't quantify that. Within what we're doing, we feel that for the short term, until the end of this year at least, unless the Congress will extend it, we hope that this is going to be extended for a long time to help the ethanol industry. The volumetric ethanol excise tax credit. If you buy ethanol and if you can, on a 200 proof gallon, get 45 cents a gallon off, that's a huge discount for power generation fuel requirements. Diesel fuel today is more expensive than alcohol. Now, over the last 20 years, that hasn't been the case. But I don't see the cost of diesel fuel dropping substantially. And we can basically flex in and out of ratios of alcohol and in a scheme of not only reducing emissions, but as far as just saving money. We have to recognize that we have an inherent problem with overpowering a diesel engine if it's not mechanically or electronically metered back. And so to say that we're 100% in control of what happens, we have a situation where you have to be leery of overpowering the diesel engine. And we know that there's programs that will lower the horsepower output on the diesel injection side of the coin. And so with electronics, we feel that that's possible, and it's something that we should have access to down the road. Getting down the list here, hit slide 22, we've made various commodity magazines and industry magazines. There's one that's probably not on here, Vital magazine that Poet puts out. We're in their winter edition alongside the Ricardo engine. They had a real good article about us and the Ricardo engine. That on slide 24, this is a picture of Bob Dickey and me out at his well. And, you know, where we started, where we are at today, we're very proud of the results that we've got. And we just want to share our story with you folks and hopefully answer some of your questions. Our contact information is on slide 25. And I think at this point, we've been into the presentation about 45 minutes. I'd like to answer anybody's questions. Whatever comments you have, positive or negative, we'd like to hear them.
Okay, folks. So thank you very much for the presentation, and we are open for questions now. Kevin, I had a question. This is Bob. You said that you could get down to 80 proof. You've tested 80 proof. Have you? Is there any particular proof that would be advantageous for an ethanol manufacturer to produce? That they, for instance, do a cut from one distillation column, or the product from one distillation column.
Yes, Dr. Firewood, the modern ethanol plant, the ones that I've looked at, and again, I'm not an expert in ethanol production, their first distillation is 120 proof. I would suppose that if you took alcohol there sooner, you could have an 80 proof batch or less. We've tested everything from 200 proof to zero proof, which is water. And it's interesting because we have real good results across the board. However, there comes a point in time where you have to avoid pre-detonation. And so that's where we think we need at least the 40% water content to just stay away from increasing cylinder pressures. But there are huge efficiency factors associated with taking less than 200 proof alcohol from an ethanol plant today. And those numbers are self-evident, the fact that most of your cost in producing ethanol is to get the last bit of water out to achieve 200 proof status. And that's a completely separate operation called a molecular sieve, going from 190, 5% alcohol, to 200 proof, which is 100% alcohol. So hopefully that answers your question a little bit.
Yep, thank you. Other questions, folks? Okay, Kevin, this is Bob again. On your slide 20, that graph there, percent alcohol throttle, is that percentage the percentage of 120 proof?
Okay. On that particular bar chart, I probably need to be more clear on that. We ended up going to 20% alcohol water reduction on this test. We didn't measure diesel, was to get a reduction in NOx. So as I increased my percent throttle at the maximum 100%, that would be 20% alcohol water mixture, which is 120 proof on this test, and 80%. And the governor on the engine maintained the power at 600 horsepower throughout the test because we had that modified with his dyno.
Okay. But most of your work has been at 15%, is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Which I assume that would correspond to, 75%? Throttle?
That would have probably have been 75% throttle would have been the 15% alcohol water 120 proof versus diesel fuel ratio.
Okay. Thanks.
I think this engine's roughly, I don't think it's quite 20 horsepower per gallon. So those flow numbers we have, I didn't want to put them in this chart for the purpose of just trying to showcase our ratio to ratio and appreciate
the reduction. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Any other questions, folks? Well, I assume that you have answered everyone's questions, Kevin.
Well, I hope I kept everybody awake.
Oh, yeah. Thank you again for a great presentation, and this will be posted within a couple of weeks on our website. I also wanted to take, again, the opportunity to remind everyone that our next teleseminar is going to be on Tuesday, July 20th at the regular time. So, again, thank you, Kevin and Bob, for a great presentation.
Okay, well, thank you, folks, for listening in, and thank you so much, Dr. Firewood, for your consideration of our technology.
Yep. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you very much.